you for being a Bump2 subscriber. Your support is greatly appreciated. In the second part of this podcast, Sue and I talk about a variety of things. We talk about resilience, tattoos, and the very important role of ceremony in the healing process. Now, I think unconditional love is a game changer. And, you know, so many people far wiser than me look at all the noise of life and they distill it down to one fact, and that is love. Mm.
And it sounds corny, and I know, I remember being in a group of a bunch of physicians, and I started talking about, I think that healthcare is about love, actually. It's about caring for each other, and the deeper version of that is love, and how they poo-pooed that and said, you can't talk about that, right? Like that was, I have a quote in my first book about, you know, that's the word that medicine fears, is the word about love. But I'm not talking about like romantic love or sexual love. Like they get all mixed up about that. It's actually a deep caring for one another. And, you know, what is healthcare except for that in its, you know, purest form anyways, is about love. And it's not a woo-woo thing. It is something that I think we desperately need to get back to that notion in healthcare. Healthcare isn't about efficiency. It's not about like caring for people like they're, you know, pieces in a car factory. It's about getting to know each other as human beings. And, you know, I worry that we've strayed so far away from that humanity that really love is the one thing that's going to bring us together. But first we have to start talking about it.
Well, I think first you have to learn to love yourself, foibles and all, before you can possibly accept somebody else.
That self-compassion piece is, and it's not about self-care and bubble baths. And I mean, there are things you can do to certainly in the moment make yourself feel better, but it's really about accepting that you are an imperfect human being and accepting those imperfections and learning from them. And I think a big piece of self-compassion is about being honest with yourself. And that's, I think, that's what cancer forced me to do, I think, is to look at myself and be honest about the way I was in a way that I hadn't wanted. I think that's one thing we're all scared of. And that's why we keep so busy all the time, is so that we don't have a chance to just sit down and think. We avoid that at all costs. And I don't know. I hope one thing we have been able to slow down a little bit, I think, and that's certainly a piece of the pandemic I'd like to keep is, you know, to be able to, you know, relish going for those walks and not having to like have a schedule that's all jam-packed all the time. I think just having this space is really important.
Do you think you're more reflective now, having gone through what you've been through?
Yes, I try to think instead of being so reactive when something happens, because I know, I'm sure reading my book, you realize that I am an emotional human being. Certainly that's kind of how I'm like mostly feelings. I have some rational part of me, but I'm kind of lead with my feelings. And so I think what I've learned is to be aware that I'm feeling something instead of just jumping into it and realize that sometimes I have a choice. And like the other day I was on Twitter, which is kind of like this terrible arguing machine. And I wish that I could get off. I don't do Facebook. I like Instagram. It's got nice pictures, but Twitter's how I get my news and I have a following there and stuff. So I do try to keep it up, but I was furious about something I read on Twitter and I typed out a response and then, you know, in the olden days, I would have just been mad all day. Like I would have just carried that around with me all day, something that happened on the internet. And as Aaron, my son, Aaron, who has Down syndrome, tells me, Mom, he says, the internet is not real, right? And sometimes I forget that. And so what I think I've learned to do is I recognize that anger in me. And what I ended up doing was I made the choice. I thought, I'm going to go for a brisk walk. And it was raining here because I live on the west coast of Canada. So it's always raining here in the wintertime. So I went for a brisk walk and I listened to a podcast that was just like, it was a food one. So it had nothing to do with healthcare or disability rights or anything like that. And I actually found myself smiling and laughing along with it because it was actually quite funny. And by the time I got back, I did feel better. Like that half hour walk does work. And in the before times, I wouldn't have been aware enough to do that I had a choice to kind of ruminate or stew in that anger or I could try to shake myself out of it. Not like I didn't feel it, because I certainly did feel that anger, but also that I didn't need to get stuck in it. And that's something I think that, you know, I've certainly learned over this past 5 years, for sure.
Well, and the other thing, you mentioned this in your book, there are politics and one-upmanship in everything. Who's sicker? Who has a worse diagnosis? And then just the general politics of cancer that appear on Twitter and elsewhere. It can really just be a morass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to ever forget that I had cancer. I mean, I always think about how much of my identity is it, that piece of it. And I think of myself as somebody who once had cancer, and my cancer could come back. I'm not naive about that. Certainly for women with breast cancer, 1 in 3 times it comes back as metastatic. So that's something I'm always aware of. And I think I live with that awareness, which is difficult. But I guess I have to, because of Aaron, you know, we do a lot of advocating for him and his community. And I have to decide on, I always talk about what hills I'm going to die on, right? And I can't be in conflict and outrage all the time. It's just not healthy for me. And like, for goodness sakes, like, I hope that I can live with outrage and joy at the same time. Like, I want to have both in my life. And I can be outraged, no problem. I just turn on Twitter and be outraged. But it's the joy, that's the part that I actually have to nurture and kind of help manifest in my life and figure out what are the things that do give me joy. And that's something, again, that I've been working on the last few, because, you know, as a mom and blah, 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 like, I don't think I even stopped to even think about what those things are. So I'm not saying cancer was not a gift. I would give it back if someone tried to give it to me again. I don't want that gift. But I did realize that, you know, just being in the moment, I think, is in itself a joy. And slowing myself down to do that is something that I have learned, especially over the last 5 years.
I think choosing joy, consciously choosing joy, is a really important thing in life.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I think humans are, we're kind of bend to the negative, like we naturally go there. So, and I'm not talking about being Pollyanna and cheerleading all the time, but, you know, thinking about and being aware of things that make you happy and give you joy is really, really important. And I think I had lost sight of that before, because the world is kind of in some ways a terrible place. So, I mean, I shouldn't really say that, but I mean, there are good people in the world, but, you know, we're lucky enough, we live on a mountain and I can go for a walk in the forest, and just realizing that joy really is at our fingertips. It's not something I need to, you know, fly to Hawaii to go find joy on a holiday. We can find it somewhere in the everyday. And I think that, you know, that knowledge is a really powerful one.
Oh, it's incredibly profound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's incredibly powerful that you have that choice, and you can make that choice in a small way every day. And think about the long-term implications of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, my kids watch that, certainly, and I wish that was something that I had learned when I was younger, because I would have been role modeling that for them. And I'm afraid that I learned that a bit late in life. So there, that, I guess that's the very long answer to your question earlier. What I wish that I had told my younger self is that, you know, make sure that you pause. And as you said, look for the joy and choose the joy in your life, because the negative will come to you easily. And I think the important part is, you know, it's in your control to find joy in the everyday. And that is a very powerful message.
If you could rewrite your story, would you?
Oh, I guess I learned, you know, you don't learn from the good stuff. You do learn from the hard parts of your life. So I wouldn't be the person I was unless I had gone through those bumps in my life. I wish that I had had some of this self-awareness before I became a mother, though I think that that's probably quite rare, you know, for somebody in their early 20s before they had kids to go through all that, because I worry sometimes I pass some of my anxieties on to my now adult children, right? So I guess that would be my one regret, that I mean, not like I had wanted to get cancer when I was in my 20s, but that something had happened that I had thought, okay, maybe I need to look at myself. And I hadn't waited till I was 50 years old. But other than that, I mean, I think my kids are okay. You'd have to ask them directly. But I realize now how much impact, you know, being mothering them had on them, because I certainly felt that with my own mother, right? Like that's, anyways, I didn't really answer that properly. I don't know, Pat. That's a hard question.
It's a really hard question. It's an impossible question.
I know. Yeah. So I guess you just kind of speculate on it, like think about it a little bit. So I'm actually happy with who I am right now. So I guess all those bumps led me to where I am. So I managed to get through it. So be it. As long as I learn, I keep learning. I guess that's the one thing. I don't want to think I'm a work in progress. I'm not finished. And I just continue. I think the older I get, the more I know I don't know. And so it's kind of fun to be curious and not to have all the answers. If you kind of look at it that way, as far as uncertainty is concerned, and I'm certainly trying to enjoy the ride more.
I try to see uncertainty as opportunity.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Otherwise, wouldn't life kind of be boring? I think it would. Like, I don't know. Like, it depends how you frame it, I think. And you can also have, like hard part, like I said, enjoy, and you can hold that together at the same time. I think that's something I didn't realize before. You can have, like, a really crappy day, but then you can also find joy in your day. You don't have to have one or the other. It doesn't really work that way. And having the capacity to have both, I think, is a really important realization.
Yeah, I think in order to find that balance, you have to go through absolute crap in your life to be able to come out the other side and then be able to hold them both. I don't think it magically happens.
No, it's resiliency, right? Like it just, I mean, I wish things would be easier so you didn't have to be so resilient, especially for my son who has Down syndrome. I think that, you know, a lot of society and systems aren't working for him. And I wish that things were easier in that way. But it is true, the greatest lessons come out of struggle, I have to say. And gosh, I wouldn't have had anything to write about in my books if everything had come easily to me. I mean, that's not a very interesting story. Most stories, if you think about reading a story or going to a film, are, you know, the main character has conflict. That's what happens. And the story really is in the overcoming. And that's what's interesting, is the overcoming and what you learned from the overcoming. And certainly all of us who've had cancer, you know, we've done some overcoming, and there's interesting stuff in there, which is, I'm sure, why you started your podcast.
Well, you know, I think I started my podcast to heal in many ways, partly to share stories. But everybody I talk to, absolutely everybody, I learned something from them. And some of the themes that come out of Bump, I'm working on a book for Bump in the Road, actually, hoping to have it done this spring, where I pull out some of these major themes and like some of the things we talked about, like the power of love, about healing, about isolation. There are so many lessons to be learned from each of these themes. And I think stories are the best way to portray this.
Yeah, I mean, my hat off to you, like to talk to people and be open to learning from them. I think that's such a powerful thing. And also to give people like me a safe space for us to be able to talk about it, because, you know, as we craft our stories, and they're not just in our heads, like we either say them or we write them down or we paint them or we, you know, take photographs. There's lots of ways to share stories, not just, you know, through words. But I think it helps make sense of random things that have happened in our lives when we craft it into a story. And it does help with healing. I really believe that to be true when we get chances, but they have to be safe spaces. That's something I work a lot in healthcare about, is talking to staff, and I have workshops with staff about how to create a safe space for a patient to come and tell their story, because it isn't just done automatically, right? There's things and safeguards that need to be put in place, because often our stories are very vulnerable and about, you know, the scariest, hardest parts of our lives, and people need to be taken care of when they share their story.
Yeah, Bernie Siegel has written a lot about this type of thing. Bernie was an oncologist. He was a surgeon, I'm sorry, at Yale. And I met him years ago, and we've kept in touch over the years. And he has a book. I'll have to look up which book it is. He has a number of them out, and I'll email it over to you.
Yes,
but
yeah.
He has a number of exercises where he has you draw certain things, and they're incredibly powerful. I think that expressive aspect of letting our feelings, our stories out on paper in some way or on a canvas is an incredible opportunity to process and learn.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what it does. And it doesn't need to just be words. So not everybody thinks, I'm a writer, so words are kind of my thing, but certainly that's not the case for everyone. Even on, if I look at photographs, right, they can be very powerful. And in fact, I had an article recently published in the Journal of Medical Sciences and Radiation, like the folks that do the radiation therapy for cancer patients. And it was just the pictures I took when I was in radiation at the hospital. And I took a picture that was black and white inside of the hospital. And then when I walked outside after my treatment, I took a picture in color. And what those two pictures did is it helped. I couldn't write at the time, like even though I'm a writer, I found it really hard. My journal was all just a bunch of blah, blah. Like it didn't even make any sense because I was in such an awful state, but I could take pictures. And the one thing about us carrying our phones around, right? We always have a camera. And there was something about, I needed to document that time. And that was the only way that I was able to do it is so through those photographs and how important it was for me to share those back to the professionals to show them how it felt for me to be in radiation therapy. And it was very stark and black and white for me inside the hospital and actually ugly, right? Like there's very little in the hospital that is beautiful or has art. I mean, depending which hospital you're in, some hospitals are better at that than the others. But then, you know, the contrast with the outside world, and it happened to be spring. And so there were, you know, cherry blossoms everywhere and flowers, and it was just gorgeous on the outside. And so, yes, you're right. There are many, many ways. So drawing would be a way, taking pictures. People create, you know, they write poems. And so when I talk about storytelling, I hope that it's like an expanded notion of it. It doesn't need to just be standing behind a podium talking to a group of physicians. There's lots and lots of ways to get our stories out.
One of the most moving art displays I think I've ever come across was a woman, or there may have been two women, who took the radiation masks, you know, that they make when you have head and neck radiation, and they decorated them. And I found that to be so interesting. And some of them were beautiful, some of them were horrible, but they took that experience and they put it into a form of expression. It was one of the most moving art displays I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, the fact that they found somewhere to display it as well, like I think they were taking back their power. That's what that was about, is taking something generic that the hospital gave you and creating something that was your own. And in fact, I write about this in Bird's Eye View, and I know a lot of people think I'm kind of off my rocker, but you know, when you have breast cancer, they give you these radiation tattoos that are permanent on your body. Like, and I said, why can't you make them semi-permanent that they wear off after a while, but they don't. So I've got these dots on my breast where I had the radiation therapy. And one of them is very visible that I can see. And so what I did with that, it bothered me, like to look down and see that all the time. I've got scars and stuff I see, but somehow I feel differently about that. But the fact that they gave me something that I didn't want to have permanently on my body. And so I went and got a tattoo, which actually hurt a lot. But, you know, so there's, I don't know, some sort of process of that too in the pain that went along with it to cover that up. So I think giving people who've had serious illness a chance to take back their bodies is a really important thing. And I can see when you talk about decorating the masks, that was probably part of that process too. And you know, we need opportunities to be able to do that so that we can move on.
You need closure. I had some radiation to my head and had one of those masks. And I remember taking it home and I looked at it and I held it and I threw it out. I didn't know what to do with it. And I should not have done that because it left it. I never had closure.
Right.
And it was an awful experience.
Yes. I wonder if some ceremony, you know, like to be able to do that. I know when I went to a cancer retreat and they had a lot of ceremony in that. And as far as letting things go. And in the end, we had a drum circle so that you could like kind of beat out your rage. If you had any rage, you could take it out on the drum. But really realizing, I guess what you're saying is that you have feelings associated with things that happen to you. And what do you do with them? So, you know, that art idea is one thing you can do with them, or writing them down, or even having some sort of ceremony that you're able to have that kind of closure. And it might look different for every person, but I wish that we talked about this kind of thing more instead of just, oh, your treatment's over, you're done, because you're not done. In fact, I was at the beginning of something totally, I think the after cancer thing is another phase of having cancer, but nobody really talks about it, except for us cancer people.
Yeah, no one talks about it. No one wants to hear about it. But I think it is the most difficult aspect of the entire experience.
Yes. I had a friend who had had cancer. I phoned her when I first got my breast cancer diagnosis. And she said, very gently to me, she said, for me, the hardest part was after the treatment was done. And it didn't scare me that she said that, but I always remembered it. And so I wasn't surprised by that. I think after my treatment was done, I was almost expecting it. And sure enough, it was as if I had been cut into a whole bunch of pieces and I had to figure out how to put myself back again.
I think that about sums it up for the cancer experience.
It's not very eloquent, but that's kind of what it felt like. You're all chopped up and then you have to figure out how to, and you get put back together in a way. People always say, oh, just get back to normal. Like, and I put that in quotes too. But you can't, because you're not there anymore. You cannot ever go back to that person. You are changed forever. And so figuring out what you're going to do with that is actually, that's the existential part. Like, that's a really hard part, I think. It does come from the after, and I certainly wish that we had more after cancer care. And that's something I can pay for privately here. I've managed to find myself a therapist who herself had cancer. So I feel very, very fortunate that way. But, you know, it's something that's expensive and that not all people can access. And I think that every single person who has cancer needs that type of care afterwards.
I think everybody that has trauma, and that is all of us, needs some sort of care afterwards, some sort of expressive therapy, somebody to listen, somebody to not be judgmental, and to allow you that safe space just to process things.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly. So I guess even 5 years later, I'm talking to you, Pat, and part of this is processing, right? Because even as we talk and I listen to the podcast later, I will learn things perhaps that I hadn't thought of before. And so I haven't put cancer in a box and put a lock on it. I wish I could, but I actually can't. Like I said, it's part of me, you know, similar to the way that the Down syndrome is part of my son, right? Like, it's not something that you can eradicate, because it just is. It's a piece of me now that I have to carry around. And the more I think I talk and write about it, that the lighter that becomes for me.
I think so. And the more you integrate it into, I'm 5 years out from my last round of chemo. And I continue to work through all those issues that are associated with it. But one of the good things that has come out of it is I have a sense of limited time. And that's actually good. It forces me to make decisions about who I want to be with, what I want to do, how I want to spend my time. And I think that that has been incredibly beneficial.
It's that I think there's a lot of confusion, but that out of that comes clarity.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.